For December the 11th, 2015, we talk about the Game Award weirdness, keep talking and no one explodes, and we ask you about your favorite twists in games. Welcome to Level 130. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jala Prendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Boy, oh boy. I know people say this about the holidays, but this is a busy time.
Yeah, oh, no yeah. kidding. Oh my God.
So much is going on. Like even just network stuff. Like, we have that Chalice Dungeon episode coming out. Like, nobody here plays Bloodborne, so you don't know what that means, but if you did, then you would have a reflexive just revulsion to that thing I just said. Yeah. Oh my gosh, then we have Fallout 3 after that for Watch Out for Fire. It's like, just like,
that's
so
a
much
happening.
Yeah,
like, it's like 60 plus hours a game.
Yeah, well, we did Morrowind last year. Like, you know, it's a bunch, like, on top of like work and stuff. Like, are you guys feeling the same thing? Like, is there any room to breathe?
We unfortunately just have one podcast.
Well, there's nothing saying that. I replace other things in my life with podcast stuff. So there's nothing saying you guys don't have that other stuff that I sacrifice week in, week out for these people.
Get a podcast. Break up with someone, get a podcast.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just collect them. Just collect them. Turn your sorrows into... And I was going to say borrows, like borrow. Nope, nothing. Didn't work. This is my third consecutive hour of podcasting. So
turn your sorrows into burrows, and we'll make it slant rhyme, and we'll figure out what it means later.
Yeah, there we go. Just burrow in and listen to us talk about some video games.
So yeah. I want to lead off and say I do not support the multiplayer question this weekend.
Yeah. So.
About half of them, and like read the first half of the sentence was like, nope. So
well, we may end up having to dismiss you from it.
Yeah, I might be doing a lot of muting during that part.
Well, yeah, you can only mute yourself. I don't know if you can mute us, although I guess you can take your headphones out.
I might do a lot of throwing my headphones across the room.
Well, we are going to move that to the end just so people can listen through our normal stuff without having to like skip around and try to figure out where it's safe to start again.
Yeah,
that's a smart idea.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, I just to cap off our inanity meter with some more banter. Can I give a holiday PSA for everyone?
Sure.
Yeah. So for those of you who have Christmas trees or celebrate Christmas in any form, garland is bullshit. What you should do is just go out and buy some ribbon. Like for Christmas presents that you would wrap ribbon, they've got like thicker stuff. Wrap that around the tree, and that looks just as good as garland, and it's twice as cheap.
Half the cost.
Yeah.
You know, when I was little, I didn't know what garland was, and I could never hear the D at the end, so I thought people were saying garlic, and I was confused.
Oh, no.
And so I would just call it garlic because I didn't know what else to call it because I couldn't read at that point because I was really little. So I would call it garlic, and my parents still talk about it that way.
Hmm.
Like, you remember when you said garlic? And I'm like, damn it, shut up.
See, I always thought that people were talking about Jeff Garland. And I was like, oh, he's pretty funny in Arrested Development.
But how can everybody hang them on his tree?
Yeah. Is it, he's like Santa Claus. He can be in multiple places.
Yeah.
Can you rent a garland? Huh.
Yeah, anyway, that's a thought that I'm staring at our Christmas tree right now, and we added it tonight. It is looking particularly beautiful, and I just thought I'd help anyone else who's doing that sort of decoration out.
Yeah, a little bit of Pinterest cast going on here.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Yeah. No, I bought my so I've made it a new tradition that every year I'm going to buy a weird bird ornament to put on my tiny shitty Christmas tree. I haven't put it up yet, but I've got a really shitty weird bird.
Oh, good.
So I'll take a picture of the weird bird and, you know, share it with everybody once that happens.
Is it officially an ornament, or is it something that you can kind of attach string to and have functions?
I buy it as an ornament, just because that feels more challenging. Like, I don't just want to stumble across a weird bird out in the world and then just put it on a tree. That seems to be in poor form. Like, you know,
any Johnny come lately can find a shitty bird.
Yeah, any Johnny come lately could just step over to that section of the grocery store
Or the dollar store. Yeah, I'm sure the dollar store's got some really great stuff. Anyway, yeah. On the note of ornaments, though, I think the weirdest, because I have a tendency of giving either really useful, practical gifts in jokes or just something completely random that everybody just opens up and goes, what in the hell is this? Well, the last year I gave out a Santar. It's a Santa Centaur ornament. It's huge.
Is it half Santa, half reindeer?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Well, it's half horse-ish.
Half Santa Claus, half Centaur. It's a fourth human, a force horse. Yeah, right. Yeah. Half Santa Claus.
Yeah. But the Santa Claus as distinct from human?
Yes.
Yep. No, it's Santa Claus's body, but it's a reindeer's head. What is it, actually? I'm sorry.
No, it's just a big, crappy ornament that's, like, I don't know, 6 inches tall. I mean, it's pretty big. So if you put that on a tree, yeah, it's going to be, the fanciest bit of the Christmas tree this year.
If it was, like, any larger, it would make more sense to put next to the tree and pretend it's attacking it.
Right? Bum, bum, ba-da-ba. That was right.
Yeah. Anyway. We're coming up on it. I have no idea what to do. Every day I'm suffocating. Just, oh God, when's what's going on?
But happy holidays.
Yay. We're here. We've done it. We've arrived. But as we said, we have a little bit of a non-standard show, just because we have an earth-shattering, format-breaking multiplayer question.
Suggested by Ollie, by the way. I don't think I mentioned that in the post.
There we go. Great. But yeah, because it is about spoilers, we're putting this towards the end of the show. So normally it goes brief multiplayer grind. Now it is brief grind multiplayer, going back to the first 30 or so episodes of the show. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So cool. I don't want to waste any more time because it's going to be really hard to time this episode. So let us go into
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games. It has been a very eventful week, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does anybody have something they want to volunteer to go first?
I got a quick one.
All righty.
PlayStation 4 multiplayer is free this weekend, so you can play multiplayer without having PlayStation Plus.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
Nice. I wonder what percentage of people are out there that don't have it.
Who own a PS4 but don't have a multiplayer?
Yeah.
Or don't have a PS Plus?
I don't have PS Plus.
No, you're constitutionally opposed to it.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Did you have Xbox Gold or whatever?
No.
No. No. There you go. I did not know that. I just assumed you had it.
So
I thought you were cool, man.
I did the PlayStation 3 multiplayer because it was free.
Yeah. it's feasible that there's a person who is averse to monthly charges.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And also, like, you still really don't trust Sony with your credit card.
Yeah, you just get a PlayStation thing through Amazon because I trust Amazon for some reason over Sony.
So second question, how many people have a PS4, don't have PlayStation Plus, but have games that are multiplayer for PlayStation 4 without their PlayStation Plus?
Like multiplayer only?
Online enabled. Because, does Fallout 4 have a multiplayer mode?
I don't know.
If you didn't have PlayStation Plus, you probably wouldn't buy Call of Duty, whatever we're at now, just because, the majority of that game is going to be online, and you don't have that. So I wonder what games people are going, oh my God, now I can take X game online that they have.
I'm sure there's some straggler who has like Dragon Age Inquisition, which apparently has a kind of okay multiplayer section.
Really? Dragon Age? Really?
Yeah.
Huh. I would not have guessed that.
Yeah. I think the notion of putting a multiplayer mode into your primarily a single player game is more common nowadays than you would think.
Yeah. I was about to bring up The Last of Us, and although that is a remaster from 3, that has a stellar multiplayer mode. Yeah.
It does. Metal Gear Solid also is a game that I have that I could use for multiplayer.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Nice. So are you like scheduling yourself to take
full? No, not really, but I'll probably squeeze in a couple hours maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ben, I thought you were going to talk about the Game Awards.
Yeah, I know. I thought so too.
I normally count on you to do that.
Wrong city this year, I guess.
I suppose. Oh, yeah. You did go at one point, didn't you?
Yeah, I went last year.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
I saw Kiefer Sutherland from afar.
It was like, oh, this is before he started sneaking around.
Yeah.
Because of that game, you guys? It was a game. It was a game.
He sees you from up close all the
that
time.
He did.
You just don't know it.
He had somebody with him, but you didn't notice because she was silent. We're not gonna do that. No Like, nothing about it seemed too noteworthy. Like, I didn't really pay that much attention. Witcher 3 won the game of the year.
Yeah. Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. And then also Kojima wasn't allowed to actually attend to pick up his award, which that was another thing. But other than that, that's about the highlight of what I know.
Yeah.
I scanned all the articles from it, and I was just like, not interested. Mm-hmm. Ni No Kuni is getting a sequel, which that and Far Cry 3 are the two games that I go, oh my god, I need to play those, and then I never get around to it. So,
well, Ni No Kuni, like, they're doing that without Miyazaki or without Studio Ghibli, which seemed to be the cool thing about the first one.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it would be like, if they did The Last Guardian, Sans Ueda.
Mm-hmm. Huh. So yeah, that's not actually my story. I just wanted to bring that up, just let Ben know how disappointed I am in him.
to give you an indication, I actually asked via our little hidden, Slack private channel for the show. I asked, so is anybody going to be talking about the Game Awards? And then Cole's like, Ben will probably do that. And I'm like, okay, I'll talk about something else.
Well, but there. But there we go. Let's see here. So be sure to play some multiplayer if you are, in there. Jala, how about you?
Mine is also really, really quick. I just found out, like, right before the show, that Hotful Boyfriend has a sequel called Holiday Star, and it's coming out on PC on December 15th and on PS4 and Vita on December 22nd. And I didn't even know that was even coming out in the first place. But yeah, so that's all I know about it. It's a thing. It's coming.
Is that like Christmas Nights, except with...
I guess. With pigeons, I guess.
So legit, I read the headline of the article that you had posted into the Slack channel. And I read it, Hotfowl Boyfriend Squirrel arrives just in time for the holidays.
Oh, you've just been reading my Twitter feed.
Well, and then too, like a quote from Devolver Digital. There was this one Christmas Eve, I got really drunk at the Cheesecake Factory down in the mall and made love to a waitress in a Santa's workshop, and that's across from Banana Republic. Anyway, by Hotfowl Boyfriend Holiday Star. Mm. There you go. That's it. Thank you, Devolver Digital.
So. Huh. I wonder if that's like a translation or if that was actually made specifically for this. Huh. Mm. I don't know.
I would bet translation.
Yeah.
Maybe not. I don't know.
Hmm. Well, yeah, check that out. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. So mine is that Street Fighter V is getting a special edition called the Hot Package. Which stars scantily clad versions of some of their fighters, as opposed to the original version of the fighters, which is just scantily clad. So I honestly don't know how to tell which ones are.
Wait, can you hit me again with a distinction?
Well, the original, most fighting games have very scantily clad versions of their characters,
right?
Base versions, and the new version is going to be different, scantily clad though.
Okay, even scantilier clad.
I looking at the art, I don't even know about that. Like Ryu has Ryu always had a shirt off?
No, maybe Ryu's not. Kind of always worn a white gi.
Okay,
yeah.
You
can see his pecs and his biceps, pecs and saps. But
oh, no. You need to look closer at the image in the article of the new cover art, because this is actually going to be a boxed edition of the game.
No, I'm looking at the whole I'm watching a video of this right now.
Okay.
I'm not sure who this lady is right now. There's like both too much fabric and not enough.
Yeah. if you look at the box art for the game, which is in the link to that article. I totally missed it my first time around, and then saw it in the comments and went back up, and true enough, there are action lines around Ryu's crotch.
Yep, that's drawing right towards it.
And I'm just trying to have to figure out what motion, and this is horrible for an audio format, but what motion has to be going on there to have the action lines drawn that way?
Can I just give you one word?
Sure.
Spring.
Yeah. Also of note, I caught this one on my own. Ryu's eyebrows go over his headband.
Oh yeah, it's like a Sonic effect.
They've always done that.
Yeah.
Have they? Okay. I just don't know the game.
Yeah. That is on model for him.
Gosh.
Also the female character, which again I don't know who this character is.
Chun-Li.
That's Chun-Li.
That's Chun-Li.
Wow. That's hilarious. Like she's not as leggy. Like even in the game.
No. They changed that. Well, and granted, it cuts off just below the waist. So
well, no. Like even in the game, she's not as. Maybe it's the fact that she's not wearing like the skirt with the really defined line.
Sure.
In fact, yeah. It's mostly like it's all the way up the hip is where this cuts off, where this costume mm-hmm. cuts off. But she does not appear to be. I've seen a little bit now, but Chun-Li is defined by her thighs. Well, she's doing the kick too, so I'm just full of shit. So. But people knew that. And also in the freeze frame, right, as she is knocking out this one guy who I assume is what's his name? Mask guy.
Vega?
Yeah, who I assume is Vega without his mask. Her panty shot or her crotch is only blocked out by like some magic crystal that is appearing around her as she attacks. So like I'm straight up like I'm getting like a full maybe quarter to a third Mons. Right now. yeah
so it, the you know, this has the high potential to be creepy Dead or Alive style, you know, very badly. For some reason it gets away with it with a wink and a smile. Mm-hmm. At least from what I've seen. So I'm not sure what, maybe it's because they've got Ryu and Chun-Li or I don't know what, but this seems very good-hearted or in good fun.
So maybe
I'm sure
it's just
people who there are people who are taking it the wrong way because it's a hot edition. Of course, it's for that. But and I don't know. There's something different on this versus Dead and Alive. I can't quite put my finger on what it is.
So they've built up goodwill by. Street Fighter characters have kind of been sexualized before, but like that's not what it exists for. Whereas mm-hmm. Dead or Alive pretty much is what's his name from Team Ninja, glasses guy, sunglasses
guy. Yeah. I forget his name too.
Yeah, it's kind of his like, ooh, I'm going, you know, it's the Bayonetta thing. Like I'm going to make my version of what I think is hot, and that's kind of what it's going to be for. And people are going to flame us because we are talking about sexual depictions of women in a game. So fuck you, I guess. But so they're cashing in on goodwill because they kind of haven't done this before, but I think old goodwill spends fast.
Sure.
You know, so it's kind of like you're gonna get away with it this time, but I kind of expect better from you.
Yeah. To circle back around to my original point, the idea that a fighting game, which fighting games are universally bad about having scantily clad characters, mm-hmm. or notorious, I should say, for having scantily clad characters.
Like Pikachu in Smash Brothers, no pants on.
Oh my God. I know it's untoward. But yeah, so it needs an amped up version from that is kind of humorous to me.
Well, from what your article shows, they're doing it as pre-order incentives at GameStop, PlayStation Store, and Steam in North America, but it's only Japan that gets the special boxed version. So
with Ryu action crotch lines.
With hot Ryu is what it says.
Yes, hot Ryu, that is Ryu. Kind of the mimetic title for this version of Ryu. Is that
he looks
is
quite happy in the box art. He usually looks pretty pissed off.
Yeah.
He's also got a beard. What the hell?
Yeah, well, that's a Street Fighter V thing.
To mention that.
Yeah.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Is that universal for Street Fighter V?
Yes, I believe so. Most of the art that I've seen of him has had a beard. Okay. But also, M. Bison has a white goatee. But he's also, it looks like he's wearing more clothes. I was expecting him to be like kind of all scarred up and stuff, but yeah.
That's funny.
That's really weird.
Good stuff.
I can see them not offering this in retail stores because like there are definitely games, I forget what publisher it was, but back when I was working at a video game store, the corporate had us keep certain games back and only put out like placeholder boxes because they were considered to be kind of too hot for TV. There's a specific line of for some reason, like bullet hell side scrolling shooters that is like way over sexified. That has like a bunch of like gothic Lolita girls. Like somebody will write in and let us know what that is. But it's like, nope, you can't put that out there because it's a bunch of sexualized young girls. And I was like, okay, fine. Yeah, I'm down with that. And then there was also a game, like apparently it's a series that people really regard well, called Record of Agarest War.
Okay.
And it's a series of like strategy, like tactical, like Final Fantasy Tactics, Disgaea kind of things. With the idea being that like you're playing like generations down the line. It actually seems like a pretty cool thing where you're playing as one generation, the choices you make in one chapter determine who lives and who gets to like, you know, be the head of the family later on. Right.
Huh.
Which is cool. And I'd be down for that because that was around a time when I would, you know, buy one of those games and play it. Except for the fact that the only edition that was available was the special edition that came with one of those delightful mouse pads that had the boobs on it.
Oh, good.
Yeah. You know, boobs that stuck out so you could rest your wrist because you want to be both perverted and ergonomically correct. I'm not making judgments about somebody who, like, I'm not saying you're a pervert for wanting to put your wrist on some boobs. That's kind of a drive for a lot of people. That's fine.
I'll say that. I will say that.
on some anime, on anime little girl boobs,
take
okay?
Bold stand here. Your mouse pad is boobs. Probably a pervert.
Dennis, I read the emails, okay?
Forward them on to me.
Good, bring it.
I'm just trying to make sure that we just heap as much on you, Cole, as possible.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, you're putting some weight on a structure that is not up to code. Well, yeah. So Hot Ryu, it's the hot box.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. No, that's a different thing.
Oh, it's the hot package. There we go. Oh, yes. That's still bad.
That snap landed.
Oh man. So there was so my story, there was some stuff that happened at the PlayStation Experience. I don't know if this happened at that. Yes, it was. It was at the PlayStation Experience where they announced that the Final Fantasy VII remake is going to be episodic.
Yeah.
I was kind of excited to hear what you thought about this because that seems like an odd move.
So I would rather them do this than kind of compromise it and kind of break it up and make it the greatest hits version of that. You know, granted, it can stand some editing and stuff, and maybe this will kind of fix some of that pacing where it's like, okay, we're going to break this up into discrete parts where like maybe one episode is the whole like Nibelheim kind of thing where you go into the past and it's the flashback and stuff. Like I could totally see that. Make Midgar a whole whole episode. There are lots of like breakpoints inside of that. If it wasn't the case that like most examples of episodic games have been real debacles in terms of scheduling and stuff, I would be much more excited about this. But what I think this means is we're going to get 4 hours of gameplay in 2016 and then nothing again until like the end of 2017.
Oh no.
Like I don't know what the schedule is. They haven't talked about it. And a lot of the times in the past, the episodic move has been one to, you know, say like, well, we signed on for a much bigger thing. And I don't know if I would rather have a delay on a full big project, have a compromised product, or have this.
Yeah, that's tough. So you think they are legitimately trying to buy themselves more time?
Maybe. I have nothing to like base that on other than knowing what going episodic gives them.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and they're saying like it wouldn't fit into a single release is what they're saying. And like, yeah, I could kind of see that. Like it's a really big game with a lot of scope.
Mm-hmm.
But
we never have released a game of this size before.
At this fidelity, with this level of kind of detail and, you know, acting like this is going to have voice acting and stuff. Yeah, it's also gonna have the active time battle. Like the battle system looks kind of cool to me, with the moving camera. Like it looks a little bit more like a more fast paced Crisis Core than anything else.
Cool.
Yeah, that's how I feel. Like, do you guys have any like response to that? Like, am I off base or I don't know what?
I still have a sour taste in my mouth of the Metal Gear Solid like downloadable content. So. Oh, yeah? If it's anything like that, then I'll kind of be bummed out about that.
Can you give a recap on that and why you're bummed about it?
If it's like $20 and it's an hour of gameplay, I would not be happy with that.
Yeah. I wonder if it's something where it'd be a season pass. Like, maybe they need the funding or a show of goodwill in advance. And so it's like, pay full price for this up front. Get the first chapter of it for free and then pay us to get all of it at once. And then that'll go into helping finish the rest of it.
Yeah. I see this. This could be a good thing for me. So I've played 10 all the way through. I played 13 all the way through. I then bounced off of 9 fairly early on and then got a good way into 6 and petered out. And so I'm kind of not sure I'm at the point where investing in the full game for 7, which I know is the game. Like that's the one for most people. If that's worth it for me, because I don't know if I'll ever get through it. And so to say, hey, we'll give you the first 5 hours of this or however long, first section of this for $5. Mm-hmm. I can, get that experience, kind of see it in a really cool way. And then, hey, if I can't get through the rest of it, then I've only invested so far and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's almost like doling it out in smaller, more manageable chunks is not a bad thing for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got to agree because I don't have time to commit or interest in committing to something that is that long of an RPG that's, going to sink my life that much. Like I'm more likely going to fall off and just get disinterested at some point and then go off and do something else just to have a change of pace rather than keep playing the same thing for millions of hours, So like if it were split up into smaller chunks, the likelihood of me actually finishing all of it is higher. So
you don't think that you would forget about it? Or have like friction coming back into it?
At least we could, I could forget about it in a discrete chunk, right?
Okay.
So I've completed something, even if it's not the full game.
Mm-hmm.
The other question I would have is if I was going to come to Final Fantasy VII, would it be lost on me playing this HD remake when I don't have any history with the first one?
I can't say because I am so nostalgic about this game that I can't say, well, the story and the characters really carry this through like that. At a lot of points in that game is objectively not true.
Yeah.
Well, for a lot of people, I think too, that it's Final Fantasy VII is old enough that this remake will also bring in new people who haven't played the original game at all. Kind of like Genesis is talking about too. So like I would think they would be designing it so that way, yes, it brings up that nostalgia part, but also, is accessible to people who don't have that history behind the game.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm excited about it still. Like, this doesn't diminish my excitement.
No, I don't think so.
I also haven't played the original Final Fantasy VII, so I'd be interested in playing this. But, yeah, hopefully, I don't know. Hopefully it's not like $200 price tag overall or something like
thing.
That. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But amortized over 2 years?
That gets into the whole how do you price a video game
and
do you put on the time you spend with it, and that's a rabbit hole we don't need to go down.
I don't want to do that.
I think Jala's left for
she's
already done her
boyfriend.
There we go,
we're good.
We did it. All right, cool. Yay. So let's mark that off on the checkbox and we're good.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind. It is so weird to do that right after the news, but there's a good reason. Trust
us. Up is down. Down is up. End is
up. Where we talk about the games we have been playing, and I'm going to be watching the time a little bit more closely because the alarm for this isn't just going to be me getting tired. So Jala, it's been a while since you've been on here, so I'm going to throw to you first.
Okay, normally I do co-op mentions, but frankly, it's been a while, so I played a lot of games with a lot of people, and that's a thing I like. So I'll just skip and say I've gotten to play a lot of cool games with our awesome community, and I love interacting with everybody, and even, like, my co-hosts. Hi, co-hosts! So anyway, stuff I've been playing. Main games, I've got 3. So Anna Extended Edition. This one was gifted to me by James Robinson. So he said I should play it with a guide open because the story is interesting, but the puzzles get really ridiculous. So that's how I played it. And there is a spoiler-free walkthrough available on Steam. So just FYI. Now, at the start, it looks like a benign adventure game. Like, it's really peaceful, pretty, idyllic. It gets progressively creepier as it goes, and it involves stuff like folktales, cultists, alchemy, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
You start out as an amnesiac outside of a little sawmill in the woods.
Surprise!
You feel like you should remember this place, and you feel compelled to enter the building. So the thing is, I tried to get into the house without using the walkthrough because I was like, I'll just start and see how it goes. And then when I need help. Yeah, how bad could it be? Oh my God, it's a freaking achievement to get into the house, I swear. Like, it is ridiculous. So yeah, totally have a guide open when you're doing this, or even better, just watch a Let's Play. All right.
That bad, huh?
So, yes. Okay, so anyway, before I talk about the story, let me give you a disclaimer. I've been studying miscellaneous ancient cultures, mythologies, and so on for the last several months. Okay, it's been like a stream of study for me. Now, most of the magical or quasi-religious pagan type stuff that crops up in this game is so mashed together from a bunch of half-cocked ideas that I found myself completely chafing anytime any of that crap came up. Like, I was just mad about it. So, to give you an example of what I've been studying, I'm currently debating which textbook about the archaeological findings of Proto-Indo-European civilization can tell us about the common cultural roots of language and spirituality that are found throughout a large portion of the world.
Huh.
Oh, yeah, I took that.
So, I am a minority, so, as long as you don't have any kind of, real investment in that kind of stuff, you're fine. You should be okay with the story and the little bits. Now, anyway, the actual story itself, like the main premise, I actually don't have a problem with. It's just the vehicle that leads up to it, you know. The actual premise is based on legends from the Valdias region of Italy, apparently. So, okay, that's kind of cool. And that's probably the reason why James recommended it to me in the first place is because we were talking about, my current interest in, studying folklore, mythology, and so on. So, for that reason, that essential core part was cool. Like I said, it's just the getting there that was the issue. I think that the developer had a lot of great ideas. It was just in the execution, this game is knocked for the story being kind of opaque insofar as how the facts are presented to you as you go through. And then also for the puzzles being too hard. Now, the opacity I actually don't have a problem with because you're an amnesiac who is kind of going through this place and suddenly remembering little snippets that are not going to necessarily be in order. And you are reading through books and looking at stuff and it's not going to necessarily come to you in a way that makes sense. So that part doesn't really bother me. And by the end, you do understand what's going on. So, that doesn't bother me. So really, it's just the puzzles are ridiculous. About the story though, it's weird, but I was more interested in the random, creepy, freaky things that happen just as you're walking around doing stuff. Then I was more interested in that than I was in the actual end of the game. Like the actual story at the end didn't, intrigue me nearly as much as all this other junk that was happening.
Mm-hmm.
But to avoid trying to give away the story because it is a story-driven game, I'll talk about some of the mechanics. There's an inventory system, like in every other adventure game, but there are also intuitions which unlock when you read books, examine items, and things like that. So your inventory screen is actually split in two, so you've got intuitions on the top and then your actual items on the bottom.
But do you and use you can... those items to interpret stuff, or...?
You combine intuitions together and to piece clues together and reveal new insights. So you can add two intuitions together and then get a new insight and then use that insight to combine with other stuff. You see where it gets all weird and puzzly.
Yeah. So that actually reminds me a lot of a system that was in Sherlock Holmes Crimes and Punishments.
Oh, really? I actually want to play that game.
Yeah. So I started it and really did not get very far in it at all. And it's an intriguing system because you basically go into Sherlock's brain and try to connect different, like you said, different intuitions or different facts, to form, new stuff. And then you kind of build to a conclusion, which is awesome in theory, but really it turned into a bunch of trial and error. So it's like, hey, I've got fact A, so I'll match that with B, C, D, and E to see if anything pops up. Okay. Then I'll take fact B and match that with C, D, and E to see what pops up. And then I'll take fact, and you know, there was nothing preventing you from trying every possible combination. So you just did. And then, you know, the connections that were right oftentimes didn't really, like, I wouldn't have jumped there if I wasn't trying to just try everything. So how, is it the same way in this game? Can you kind of brute force and just try all the combinations?
I will tell you that, honestly, the intuitions in this game work a lot more sensibly. I didn't have that problem whatsoever insofar as those are concerned. Now, of course, a guide's going to tell you combine these to do this, but like if you're looking through them and actually just poking through the little tidbits of information, you've already pieced it together before you even get to, you know, combining intuitions. So like you do that and that just kind of verifies that you're on the right track. So no, it actually works.
That's good. That's the way I think the Sherlock one wanted to work, but didn't.
But that's kind of bullshit, isn't it? Like the idea of churning, like, you know, something like insight, like shouldn't they design it so they give you, the player, the insight, you know, or, you know, something, and then you use that personally to solve the actual puzzle. Like actually writing that in as a mechanic, it just keeps making me think of Uninvited and a couple of other like adventure games or, you know, text-based kind of things where spells are items. And it's like, okay, well, you know, at a certain point you need to kill a spider. And so there's the spider Samus spell. And then you have to use that at the particular time as opposed to figuring out a way. It just seems like they're putting a way to hand wave. It just seems like very misguided puzzle design to make stuff that they should be teaching you as the player and engaging with the system, you know, into an item to mix and match and rub up with other stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's probably part of that whole opacity thing. Cause like I was saying, when you walk around the place, like you're walking around the sawmill and the different areas, different weird shit happens to you when you read books, and some of the stuff that's in the books is about folklore or cult stuff, and it kind of relates to you, but you don't know how until a little bit later. So you have to like retain the knowledge and try to piece it together. And the intuitions kind of, basically they just affirm the stuff that you kind of think you know about the storyline. Like they confirm the bits that, you know, you've tried to figure out up until this point, because it's kind of like a weird way of telling the story, I guess. But at one point I had gotten an earlier ending of the game, because you can leave the house or the cottage or the sawmill, whatever, at several points before the game is even done. And, you know, you can get like an early ending. And one of the early endings you can get is you basically like go up into the attic, see some of the weird shit that happens in there, and then you're like, nope, and you leave. And then like the character is recounting these are these different things about this building, and it comes to all these conclusions. I'm like, wait, I didn't even know that yet. And it was like, it was, the character was telling me when I got that game over early, all this stuff that I hadn't gotten to yet. I hadn't figured out. So I was like, okay.
Did you have the information and just hadn't figured it out, or did you not even get the information yet?
Well, the presentation of the information not being easy to read is one of the things that this game is knocked for. So I would say that any average player probably wouldn't have gotten all that information, you know, like wouldn't have pieced it together or, you know, like figured it out from these weird abstracted ways of telling you the story. Mm. Like there's ancient murals and stuff that you see that pop up at a random time, and you have to combine alchemical crap together to get forward in this game. And then like suddenly you know that this person was burned as a witch and all this other, you're like, what are you talking about? I don't even know what you're talking about. So yeah. But anyway, like it also has a sanity meter that, you know, for some reason at certain points it can be restored, like if you do the right thing. And then if you just hang out in the house for too long, the sanity meter goes down as weird crap happens. So you can also get a game over for losing all your sanity, but because I had a guide open, I didn't have to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
But all in all, it's a really quick game. It plays through with a guide anyway, with about 3 hours. And that's like including the time that I was fiddling around in the beginning, trying to figure out what to do to get into the house. So all in all, I would say it's probably best, because it's frustrating to play, it's probably better to watch a Let's Play than to actually go through it yourself. So, you know, like I said, it had some neat ideas to it, but the execution of it was not very well, you know, done. Like it was not made well enough for what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
So it ended up being kind of like a weird oblique way of telling the story.
Did it run well? Because every time I've tried to play it, the frame rate is just horse garbage.
I've never had a problem with it. Like it ran perfectly fine on mine.
It just seems really weirdly optimized, maybe just for the hardware I'm trying to run it on, both Windows and Mac. Like that's not the problem, but
I don't know. Well, it I didn't have any problem with it running. That was no problem. So.
What else?
Okay. Well, moving on. Next one is Hakuoki. Now, let me tell the story about how I found out about this game. I went kimono shopping online, and for anybody who cares, I got one used from a resale shop in Malaysia for $20, including shipping.
Wow.
Anyway, yeah, that's cheap as hell. Anyway, this triggered a smart ad for the live-action Rurouni Kenshin movies, which triggered memories of the parts of the series that I liked, and that caused me to look for games related to the Bakumatsu era of Japan.
Wow.
So I found Sword Kenshin, which is terrible, don't play it, and also Hakuoki. Now, Hakuoki is an otome visual novel game, but it centers around a complex, dark, and violent story that features the Shinsengumi, human experimentation, oni, and a hell of a lot of fighting and death. And I like fighting and death and oni and stuff like that, so this is totally cool for me. So it was really, really well written, with lots of interesting characters in it. You play as Chizuru Yukimura, who has come to Kyoto looking for her father, who is a doctor, who was called away on duty and disappeared a month ago. And she's dressed up as a boy in order to avoid being hassled because, you know, young woman on the road. But she doesn't find a place to stay before the sun goes down because she's looking, you know, she's too busy asking people for, you know, information about her father. So a gang of Ronin at night tries to steal her Kodachi, which is a family heirloom. And she ends up like running away from them and hiding. And then suddenly the Shinsengumi appear, except they're red-eyed and fucking crazy and kill everybody and then start hacking at the dead body, screaming for blood.
What is the story
begins.
What is a Shinsengumi? I'm sorry.
Shinsengumi is a particular group of samurai that worked with the shogunate. And, okay. You know, like during this era, it's, you know, the emperor and all the nationalist people and the shogunate and, you know, vying for power as to who's going to rule Japan. Then you also have the Westerners trying to come over and westernize Japan. So also what happens in this game is you've got swords versus guns and cannon. So, you know, that kind of stuff happens in this game. Because this is like right before the Meiji era where all of the samurai had their swords taken away and they, you know, like everything was, you know, more strictly ruled and all of that. But anyway, so more Shinsengumi pop out and they cut down the crazy ones only to find that Chizuru, you have, you know, come out of hiding and just happened to see, you know, the crazy fuckers killing everybody. So they take you prisoner because they don't want to kill a civilian, but they also can't let you go free because you saw them lose their minds. So the people who went nuts were the Rasetsu, or Furies, as they're translated into English, and they have been experimented on by the shogunate, and that's why they lost their damn mind. So the story itself really surprised me because one of the samurai in the Shinsengumi that is like, you know, holding you under house arrest basically is dying of pulmonary tuberculosis. I cannot talk. Tuberculosis. And is trying to hide.
English words, of course.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Like, I have no problem with the Japanese. But anyway, he's trying to hide his condition. Another one attempted harakiri, like, you know, cutting himself open to kill himself. But another samurai dared him to do it, and he did it because he was a hot-tempered, retarded kid, and he didn't die, so he has this big scar in his stomach. And, you know, the main character, Chizuru, that you play is, generally really sweet, but also extremely stubborn and also downright forceful at times. And she sticks her neck out and tries to defend people left and right and, you know, fights against people all the time and ends up becoming a messenger and going into battles and stuff. So, you know, like, she doesn't fight in the battles, but she does do a lot of different stuff throughout the game. And, you know, as it progresses, the whole game focuses much more on the meta plot. You know, even when there's like the romancy parts that show up that are classic otome things, but, you know, again, like the overall plot is always the forefront of what's going on, and the romance stuff is always like second to, you know, what's important, which is, you know, all of Japan is at war and there's guns and the Shinsengumi are just dying and trying to fight this losing battle. And, you know, all that stuff. So it's really cool. But in Japan, there have been a bunch of different games released. I think 5 total across a bunch of different platforms. But in America, there have had 2 releases. Both were originally on PSP. But the main original visual novel game was also ported to PS3 and also to mobile, which is how I found it. There's the visual novel, and the other game is a fighting game, actually. So the fighting game caused me to want to buy a PlayStation Vita, so I found one used, and it's on the way. John, who listeners might remember from the Leviathan bonus level. Yeah, well, John, you can thank John. John, like, I had been ranting to him and texting him about the stuff going on in this game, and I'm like, John, this thing happened! And so he just thinks it's the funniest ever, because he's nice and tolerant. And anyway, he bought the Warriors of the Shinsengumi game, which is the fighting game, because he has a Vita, and he tried it out, and he's like, you know, this plays pretty well, but, you know, it's definitely made for somebody who has already played the visual novel. So although he's not actually much into the visual novel genre, he is going to be going back and playing the visual novel because the fighting game got his interest piqued. So I look forward to playing that, too. You can look forward to hearing me talk about that later. So I was very, very excited. I think Hakuoki and Leviathan are probably my 2 favorite visual novels that I've played, like, ever. So,
is it the hot edition of the fighting game?
Oh.
Yeah, it's already based on the visual novel, so. He said unfairly stereotyping.
Yeah, that's why I just didn't reply. Okay, so anyway, the very last game I have, Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes. Yay!
So this is the game where you read a manual to somebody and it's very stressful, right?
Yes, exactly. And here's the reason why I have this game. I had a series of really bad weekends or weeks or whatever. A lot of bad things happened. And my friend Conrad bought me this game because I was feeling blue and just kind of chit-chatting with him. And we played it together. And because it's so stressful, it actually really successfully gets your mind off of whatever else is going on. And also, it can be played really quickly because each one of the bomb defusing things is about 5 minutes per cycle. So you can play a couple of them with any random person who doesn't even have to have a copy of the game and be done, you know. So it's really quick, easy to play with anybody. So I played with him, and then I played with Jonathan Kofus and Chase Greenlee and Joel Lockhart. So this game has been around.
Nice.
Yeah, you can play it face-to-face with somebody as long as the person with the manual is not actually looking at the screen, right, or, of course, on the net with Skype. One person opens the game and has the bomb in front of them. The other has the manual. And, you know, of course, the person with the bomb has to describe what they're looking at, and the person with the manual has to ask questions and instruct the person with the bomb as to how they're supposed to defuse it.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of different modules attached to the bombs, and as you increase the difficulty level, you have less time to defuse it or more modules to work through, and external challenges like the lights will turn off, or there's a clock. There's a clock on the desk. This is the worst ever. the clock will go off, like the alarm will sound, and it will just be in the background until you hit the snooze button. And like, I didn't have time to mess with the snooze button because we didn't have much time left. So I was just sitting here listening to that, trying not to get aggravated and stressed out by this, you know, when I'm trying to defuse this bomb.
I like the idea of there being a crying baby. You have to burp.
Yeah, right.
No, that's Space Team.
Well, no, like this just looks like Space Team plus is what it seems like to me.
Well, and then too, the modules vary in difficulty from something really simple, like it's a single button with a word on it, to like a series of wires or a small set of buttons, to having like some of them you have to puzzle out Morse code. Or you have to go through a maze thing, and there's all different kinds of complex button pushes in sequence, and you have to get the sequence right and refer back to the sequences you used previously. Like, yeah, the person with the manual has to write shit down. Let's just put it that way. Mm-hmm.
So can you like order a copy of the manual, or do you have to print it out and make it into your own binder like I would do?
It's at bombmanual.com, so you can just look at it on a web page or pull up a PDF and print it if you want to.
I don't want to have it electronically because I don't want to be able to control F. Like, I really don't want to be able to do that because
your
I want to.
No, but like, if I tell you, Cole, mm-hmm. So this button in front of me looks like an Alien 3. Like, it's got little antennae and like a little squiggly at the bottom. Like, that's literally how I refer to one of the buttons on uh-huh. one of the modules. What? Like, you're not gonna be able to control F that, okay?
Right, but also I don't want to be able to control F it. Like, I think that, I don't know, maybe I'm method. Like, maybe you're gonna have to die a couple times. I don't know. Well, oh, this is kind of cool. They have like port identification.
If you're gonna die method, you're only gonna do it once.
Yeah. Well, no, it's her. I'm on the other. I'm on the other end. Like, it's gonna be. I'm gonna be. Like, I'm not saying I'm not gonna be sad, but.
I mean, if your method, you will act as if she had actually died.
No!
And then you have to find some in-world rationalization for why you're able to try again.
Yeah, you'll have to, like, fake being pulled back in. You're the only one who can do this job, Cole.
And it's another Jawa. Let's see here.
Well, the manual itself actually also contains a bunch of frustrating things. Like, there are a bunch of if this, then this statements. So, if the serial number ends in an even number, then cut the blank wire. Or, if there's one yellow wire and less than three batteries or something like that, you know, like, those kinds of statements. So, like, if you are being pressured by the person who has the bomb, and mm-hmm. they're like, come on, we got, like, 1 minute left, we got two modules, come on, you know, then you're like, where is the information? So, yep.
Yeah, I'm looking at, like, the last page is just a visual description of a bunch of ports.
Yeah.
So, like, oh, well, a DVI versus VGA or serial.
Well, it's that's because, like, if one of the things says, if you have an RCA port, and then the person who has got the bomb is like, what the fuck does that look like? You know, then you can describe it and say, well, you're supposed to be looking for something that looks like this.
Nice. I also like that the manual's in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait a minute. Oh gosh, I just like this manuals. It's a subject of experimentation on its own. Like, I want to read this thing.
Well, and you know, one thing, David and I were talking the other day, and he was saying that he wants to do like a keep talking and nobody explodes like extra thing, like maybe like
bonus level, sure.
Yeah, bonus level or like a live stream or something.
Do it as
of
a stream,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Huh. Let's see here. Wait, on the subject of who's on first, I feel like I'm spoiling this game by reading this manual. But no,
on first, what?
Well, it's definitely a lot better if you don't know going in at anything about it. But to be fair, as you increase the difficulty level, it doesn't mm-hmm. matter. You need to be familiar with that manual to do like yeah. six modules in 3 minutes. You better know the manual and you better be able to describe everything. So.
Nice. Huh, well, this is yep. cool. I like this seems like a really good stream game to me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Cool. Anything else on No One, or Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes?
Nope, that's it.
Okay. Dennis, I'm going to throw to you.
Yeah, so I've just got one new game. I mentioned the Far Cry series earlier, specifically Far Cry 3. And we had like a Secret Santa thing where you could kind of put items on your wish list and know you were going to get them. Mm-hmm. So I put the Far Cry compilation on my wish list and picked that up, which is Far Cry 2, Far Cry 3, and Far Cry Blood Dragon, all on one disc.
Hmm.
So yeah, I've been playing Far Cry through, Far Cry through. I've been playing Far Cry 2 for the past 2 days since I got that. I started this probably, God, close to a decade. No, 5 years ago, I would say. Everything is becoming a decade ago to me. Yeah. But I started this game probably 5 years ago. It was in my hardcore trophy horror stage. And I missed a trophy pretty horrendously and accidentally saved my game over. And that actually got me to like rage quit and send the game back. And ever since then, I've kicked myself and been like, you should have kept on playing. That was a really fun game. So this is kind of my return. I anticipate playing through 2 and then 3 over the holidays. And yeah, man, this game, is holding up to time. It's not just nostalgia. Fortunately, I'm finding, that had me thinking about this game from time to time. It really is a fun game to play. So, kind of the story is that you're tasked to go and kill an arms dealer that is supplying both sides of a war in Africa. You show up in Africa and immediately get malaria and kind of are incapacitated. And then you get to drawn into this crazy web of the war going on, and being sent on missions for both sides. It kind of get pulled into this really losing sight of your original goal, because everyone is shooting at you and you need to shoot back. So it's very much an open world game. Like very early on, it's just kind of like, hey, here's the world. Here's a map and GPS. Good luck. Which I kind of appreciated. I didn't remember it being, you know, quite so undirected, but it's fun. And the major thought that I had about the world as I've been playing is it's surprisingly peaceful. Like, I don't know if this is just kind of I needed a Zen game and so I'm playing it that way, but traveling through this world and just kind of taking in the different vistas, especially at night on foot, mm-hmm. is very eerie and peaceful in a way I did not expect, where I've just... You know, I've been walking through the brush, you know, headed towards some kind of firefight eventually, but I'm a long way away, and I accidentally drove my car into a river, which has happened more times than I'd like to admit. So I'm on foot, and I'm just like, this is really serene. It just feels wild and other and really cool. So I was not expecting it, but that's kind of the thing that stood out to me the most in the game.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's surprising. Everything I remember about that game is people being able to shoot at you from like a mile away.
That's frustrating. There is no stealth system. Once one person knows where you are, everyone knows where you are. But at the same time, I think the game rewards a different kind of combat than we've come to expect from first-person shooters. So I would say the majority of first-person shooters, combat takes place at a range of 10 yards. You know, 10 to 20 yards out from you. Mm-hmm. And that's you're looking for enemies in that range. You're kind of using cover and maneuvering to get around them. The combat in Far Cry 2 plays out over distances of about 50 to 100 yards.
Hmm.
Like you very much like you kind of drive your car, approach the checkpoint, kind of slow down, turn off your headlights and hop up into the mounted gunner's position, kind of scout around, see if you can pick out some bodies, and then start using the machine gun to pick people off from a range of like 50 yards. And they'll start freaking out and returning fire, but you kind of manage your distance so that unless there's a sniper or a rocketeer, you kind of clear the outpost with everyone kind of being a speck off in the distance. Hmm. I don't know if that was intentional, but that's the most effective way to do things.
Hmm.
And again, because it is such a gigantic world, like this is an open world ass open world game, you kind of have the space to do that almost all the time. And the times where the combat has been less enjoyable is when you are crammed into a kind of more dense location.
I mean, do they ever force you indoors?
They do. There are indoor sections, just buildings. Most of the time, you're in a building because you're getting a quest, so it's not combat related. But there have been a couple of buildings that, you know, you work your way inside. Thankfully, just the way the AI for the combat is programmed, once shit goes down, everyone comes to you, right? Hmm. So as long as you initiate combat out in an open space, the majority of the combat is going to happen in an open space, and people don't really hole up waiting for you.
Hmm.
So by the time I've gotten indoors, even in the combat areas, most of the time everyone's been cleared out, and it's just the one objective that I have left.
Yeah.
So it's a very different experience from your typical first person shooter. Again, I'm not sure if that's really intentional on the part of the developers, but it's working for me. So nice. That's a lot of fun. I will be very intrigued to see the differences between Far Cry 2 and Far Cry 3 held up right next to each other.
Hmm. So you're going to move right on to 3.
Yeah, provided I don't like lose interest or, you know, find some reason to rage quit again. I'll kind of be pacing these out. I'm about 10% of the way through after 2 days. So I figure that is a good pace for coming up in the holidays. And then once I'm kind of off, I'll accelerate that.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, huh. I was going to ask you if you thought, I have not played Far Cry, so would you recommend that as something that Jala would like?
I think you would like it from the perspective of the game is really built around these anything can happen moments, and it rewards just random craziness. So a couple of examples, this first example is actually from the first time I was playing the game. But you know, I was trying to sneak up on an area. There was a scout out who saw me, and he went to fire up a flare to alert everyone that I was there. Well, he didn't realize he was standing directly underneath a tree. The flare hit the tree and exploded. And I don't think flares actually work this way.
That's killed kind of him awesome.
And set the tree completely ablaze. and then, you know, everyone came to that. I was able to sneak around with them trying to figure out what the hell happened to this guy in this tree. And basically they cleared out the camp without them seeing me. And allowed me to get to the objective. That was just completely random. Or, you know, instances that I've read people post about is where, you know, there's you're kind of driving down the road, and, you know, veer to dodge a zebra and run into something else, or just kind of all sorts of random craziness. It is kind of fun that, you know, fire is kind of the feature of this game and it spreads to the brush pretty quickly. It is kind of fun to just go into an area and like I said, you're kind of clearing it out with the 50 cal on back of your Jeep, and, you know, get sucked into a smaller firefight off to the side. So you hop out, you're turned around, and then you turn back around and that one explosive barrel that you set off has just put everything ablaze. And it's like, there was a village here. Then I turned around and shot a guy, and I turned back, and then there was just kind of this fiery hellscape.
Huh. There's no way to tell if that's not what's behind you at all times.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody's just rebuilding it real quick every time you turn around.
This is true. This is very true. So, Jala, I know what a fan of randomness and just trying crazy things and getting distracted and wondering off you are in games, and that's something that Far Cry definitely, at least Far Cry 2, definitely facilitates.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, you'll have to keep me posted when you get to 3.
Mm-hmm. Have you gone through the traumatic experience of watching a friend die in that game yet?
No, I have not yet.
All right.
So I think that's the point that got me to rage quit last time.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I have a distinct memory of that, actually. You saying, like, I was too invested and I am not ready for that.
I mean, if I remember correctly, I don't think there's, like, permanent consequences or anything. Like, they come back later, I think. But, like, yeah.
Well, there's no the friend. I don't remember the specifics, so I'll be interested to discover it again. But like the friend is mortally wounded and asks you to shoot them or something. And I believe
they ask you to give them like heroin to like OD as they die.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. And I think I meant to do the like, no, I'm going to save you, and accidentally chose the okay, here, die. Final thought on the game is the save system. I was actually really frustrated with, which is, you know, there are these safe houses scattered throughout and you have to check in at the safe house and then try to get, you know, go do whatever you're gonna do. And if you forget to stop at a safe house and kind of check in, you lose all your progress from before. And so, you know, if and the game is very prone to getting into random firefights that aren't connected to anything. So it's kind of frustrating to be like, you know, I'm full health with all these syringes, with health kits or whatever. So I'm fine. I don't want to, you know, go down, because all the safe houses are kind of in isolated positions. So I'd rather stay on the critical path. And then you wind up undoing a lot because you accidentally, you know, set an entire lookout station on you and couldn't handle it. So always be saving.
Save hygiene.
Yes, that word is coming up more and more on this podcast.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that's me.
Ben, how about you?
I don't have too much. I've just been continuing to play Fallout. It is a long game, it turns out. Spoiler alert. So I just got to, I think, level 31, maybe. I've gotten further on the critical path and made some... There's a couple of, like, kind of bottlenecks where it's like, you need to make one of these choices, and it's semi-permanent. And so I've done that a couple of times. I feel like I'm probably a good two-thirds of the way through the game, maybe. But we'll see.
You have a history of misjudging that. You might be like one encounter away from winning.
That could be true. Yeah. Maybe I'm very optimistic that I have a lot more game left.
I think games in general tend to be split up into acts and, you know, like sections. And the rule is like section one is basically like half the game to two thirds of the game. Section two is, you know, the remaining, you know, whatever.
Fractions are hard.
Yeah, fractions are so hard.
The remaining everything but a tenth.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Thank you. Yes, and then act three is the final tenth of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll see. Maybe I'm much closer to the end than I realize. If that's the case, I do want to start another playthrough. I don't know if I'll go all the way through or not. And in fact, I tried to do this over this weekend, but encountered a game-breaking bug for any new game that I start. So hopefully that gets patched. But
that just recently got patched, like this week too.
Yeah,
I don't know that particular issue did, but the game did.
Blurry vision bug?
No, the bug is like there's a point where you kind of come out. You kind of come out of a cutscene essentially, and so there's a moment of like of the camera like stepping out of something, and then like your hands come up and it's a regular interface, but it never has the hands come up, and you never have a regular interface, and you can't move any of the controls. So that's a problem.
Yikes. But no doubt.
But I do want to do a second run through, like a low intelligence run through, since those are always supposed to be kind of funny. Mm-hmm. And then they also included a perk in this game, where if you, it's called Idiot Savant, where you randomly get three times the experience that you would have gotten, depending upon your intelligence. So like the lower your intelligence, the more often it happens. So I just want to go through and do like a high strength, low intelligent, like, only beat up my enemies sort of run through. But
Jella, this is the first time you've been on while Ben's been talking about Fallout 4. Do you have any questions about the game for him?
No.
Sorry, didn't mean to put you on the spot. I just wanted to that seemed like another way into talking about Fallout.
No, not really, because John has like a little podcast/YouTube Let's Play thing that he does that's all about Fallout stuff. So he's been talking to me about that. Even though I'm not playing it, but he's talking to me about it, so.
Yeah.
I kind of want to get through it somewhat quickly, because I really want to play Just Cause, since that's out now.
And oh, yeah.
There's a lot of fun videos about the physics of that game. So.
Yeah, no, you really are jumping from raft to raft.
Is Just Cause 3 actually out now?
Oh, yeah, it just came out like last week.
Oh. That's it. That was sooner than I expected. I felt like the hype cycle for that was just kind of starting up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it hasn't been publicized very much.
Yeah. Cool. Well, one thing that one thing that I do know about Fallout 4 is that there's already been some talk about how it is going to influence Skyrim 2, because that's been teased, because you know all of Bethesda's games try to teach each other something.
Yeah.
So, but that's, you know, just a random, neither here nor there tidbit.
I would be really bummed out if they called it Skyrim 2, actually.
I know, and I really don't want to see Skyrim again.
No, like, take me to Elsewhere or something that. Like,
take me to a new place I haven't been, or if you're going to do a remake or something, do Morrowind. That's more interesting looking, you know? Like, it just, it looks cooler. It's a lot more interesting, and to revamp that would be a lot more fun. or revamp one of the really old ones that, you know, look terrible.
That they've retconned out of existence. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I wonder if their like lesson is they're going to do more with like home bases or something in Skyrim. I don't know if that's a good idea or not, but whatever.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that has been going around is like, you know, chit chat about whether or not like the settlement type of thing that you can do in Fallout 4 is going to be an aspect of Skyrim 2 or Elder Scrolls 6 or whatever. You know, and if so, then that will make that even more massive, mm-hmm. you know, if they have that aspect in it. So
I do think that's an element that they should have probably slow played a little bit more in Fallout, because you can do a whole bunch of like small missions, like side missions, like fetch missions to unlock all these different bases that you have. And none of them really feel too special, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, another thing about Fallout that I had read about is that they're going to be dropping the mod kit, like their official mod thing. Creative Studio whatnot next year. Of course, there's already for PC gamers, there's already fan-made mods out there, but you know, their official thing, so that way people on console can get into that. So
neat. Yeah, I'm excited to get into this, but I need to play Fallout 3 first.
Yeah. Wait, you've already played Fallout 3 though?
Oh, correct? Yeah, but I have to beat it for a show, and it doesn't make sense to play both of them at the same time.
Oh.
But it's there waiting for me.
Yep.
You have anything else, Ben?
That's all I've been playing. Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, I ain't got shit, so let's talk about multiplayer.
Done.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, and kind of commensurate with the weirdness of this, we have two things that we're going to do. First, we're going to tell you all of the credits admin stuff at the beginning. So that anybody who wants to bow out now can. And also Ben is not going to be joining us. Surprise, surprise.
Sorry.
No, we don't believe. I do not begrudge you that at all. But yeah, if you're listening to this, you know the usual stuff, the Patreon, the Facebook group, the Slack channel. If you are a donor at that level, it is always a fun place to be. I know that I mentioned a total for the Duck Stream event last week, to bordering like just above like $4,000. And, so Gary and Brayton and Nick went to that event. I'm very sad that I couldn't have gone there, but, presented that, and they, you know, talked about us and said nice things, and that's secondary, but it's also like a big event. We were the second biggest donor and contributed to what is the biggest one event take, like, you know, donation.
Yeah, I saw that. That's fantastic.
Yeah. The only donor who gave more than our community is like the biggest science and medical research center in Oregon. So
that's amazing.
Fuck yes. Thank you so much to everybody who watched and participated and gave. Like, it's really, really cool.
Thank you for reading poetry.
Oh yeah, I did.
That I popped in. Yep.
Yeah, so that was fun. And all of that is available on twitch.tv/duckfeedtv. I'm trying to get it to YouTube, but the Twitch exporter is just the worst goddamn thing. But you can go there and check that stuff out. So this is the moment where I'm going to tell Ben that he can take his leave. It's not that we don't want you to stay, but
yeah.
Well, you better tell everybody where to find you.
Missed.
Yes.
Well, you can find me at Merkalizer.
Okay.
But don't send me spoilers there. Oh, yeah, on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah, don't send Ben any spoilers.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
It's bad for his health.
Yeah.
He will throw things. It will be bad.
I read all the feed before the show, and I was literally getting stressed out reading some of them. I cannot say that on there.
People think that's a joke, but you really are averse to that stuff.
Yeah. Huh. Sorry.
He's got
weird.
An allergy.
Well, thank you so much, Ben.
All right. Bye, see Ben. You guys later.
Later, dude.
Yeah. Bye.
Is he gone? What a jerk.
Hate that guy.
Fucking Ben.
I love Ben. You'd be nice.
You haven't known him as long as we have. No, it's It's perfectly fine. And this is the point where anybody who's listening who's like, you know what, I don't want to go in for that, you can stop listening as well. You're not going to hurt our feelings. At the beginning of each of these responses, we're going to say which game it's a spoiler for. So, you know, let's just get it all out on the table. Dennis, can you read the actual question?
Yeah, so this question, inspired by Ollie, is what are the best twist moments in video games?
Yeah, so anytime where there's a turn, anytime where there's a big reveal, any of those, I need to vamp and fill in time while I grab my notebook because I have no note cards on my desk, which is inexcusable. I've got 600 of them in the same room as me, but none within reach. And here we go. So I will read Kilo's first response, which says, it's about Zelda, Ocarina of Time here, rather. Kilo writes in about that, saying, I know it's not big now, but when Link was suddenly 7 years older and Ganondorf had wrecked Hyrule shit, I really felt like everything had changed.
True that.
That's a big change in tone for the game, too. Like, it gets so much darker.
Sure.
Yeah. You played any Zelda games? Dennis?
I have not. Well, no, I take that back. I played one on GBA, the Minish Cap.
Okay.
And did not get very far through it at all. And that's about it.
Okay. Huh. Yeah. That is a big turn. Like, I think that may kind of borderline on the World of Balance, World of Ruin stuff in Final Fantasy VI. In terms of like a tonal shift. Maybe like
it was
the world
one
hasn't...
that I actually, well, yeah, it's one that I actually liked. So I was like, oh, good. Yay. Serious, dark, bloody things. I liked those.
Redeads. Give me all the redeads you got.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Jala, what does Franz say about Bloodborne?
He says about Bloodborne, that moment you realize Bloodborne isn't about werewolves.
Yep.
Impossible.
Wait a minute, but all the marketing. No, it's so much more. Please. Man, we had a lot of fun recording the Brotherhood of the Wolf episode of Bonfireside Chat, because that has a little bit of design cues for Bloodborne. Mm-hmm. I like talking about movies. That's a thing. Dennis, what does Gustavo say about Fallout 4?
Gustavo says Fallout 4 main quest line, but to be fair, I thought the plot twist was going to be more outlandish.
Oh, that it's as mundane as, I don't know what the twist is actually. And that would be one that I would be kind of mad about seeing actually.
Yeah. So good job. Good on you for not actually spoiling that.
Yeah.
So
thank you. Thank you, Gustavo. I about called you Gus, and that was probably way too familiar. Yeah, like you always risk that when there's when there's a very obviously shortened version of a name, and it's like, no, only my parents get to call me Gus.
Yeah.
So, let's see here. Amanda writes in about Final Fantasy VIII, saying, "FF8, when you find out, spoiler, that all of the main characters grew up together in a foster home with Sorceress Edea, the social worker, and they have forgotten because they were using espers or whatever they were in 8. Guardian forces? This was mind-blowing when I was a teen because of all the implications of training child soldiers and stuff, and how the military takes advantage of young people who don't have other options." People rag on that twist for being kind of dumb. And yeah, there's not an awful lot in there to like build up to it. Like if everybody's linked, you kind of want to lay those seeds a little bit earlier. But I liked it when I was young. But then again, I played that game when I was 12. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Yep. Jala, what does Tim say about Knights of the Old Republic?
I was going to ask you what that shortened thing was anyway. Okay, anyway, your player character is... Revan.
Yes, the character that was built up to be the big bad the whole time.
The whole time?
Yeah, I feel like that's a twist that actually doesn't ruin the game, because you're still going after somebody who is really bad. Like, it doesn't change an awful lot to my mind, but...
But it does!
Dennis, what does Steven say about Bioshock Infinite?
He says... for him, it was Bioshock Infinite. I know the game has some issues, but two long play sessions over a single weekend made the ending of that game click for me in a very special way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, playing. I remember playing most of that in one big session too. At least when I first played it, it was pretty intense. I don't know. I feel like even like that kept on giving twists even through the DLC.
Yeah, that really did.
Yeah.
It's interesting. There's kind of this weird dynamic where, you know, because you play games over such a longer period of time, mm-hmm. You can kind of marinate it for longer, which has the potential, one, to make the twist that much better if you still don't see them coming, or two, it has the potential to kind of, and this unfortunately happens more times than not, to kind of allow you to kind of puzzle out, okay, I see what's going on here. This all makes sense.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, it's almost like they have to be more actively putting in the cues. They can't, like, count on you having seen something, you know,
right.
In, like, mm-hmm. in the previous setting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Eric writes in saying, about Dark Souls. That's hard. That's hard to call that out. Anne Orlando being a facade, really, the whole plot of Dark Souls kind of being an ambiguous facade. So,
don't
yeah.
worry, I won't retain this information.
No,
later.
No,
spoil nothing.
Yeah, all of this, like the names are not going to mean anything to you if you haven't been there. No. So, but yeah, nothing is as it seems. Like it is a little bit of a Wizard of Oz story, at least that section of it. Yeah, Jala, what does Ollie say?
Oh, good lord, he's got a lot to say. Oh. Hi, Ollie. Okay, first off,
it's
like,
his question. He can do what he wants.
Yeah. But he's like, Merkelizer must be off this week. Yeah, he did. He went off. All right, anyway. Had a great debate with friends over this a couple of weeks ago. Is it possible for twists to work in games? We kind of came to the conclusion that they don't, as your active participation removes you from analysis and leaves it hard to figure out the twist in advance. And that's what the best twists are. You can see them if you pay attention.
Yeah.
And then now about Braid. I do think that Braid's twist is amazing. You can get little hints to the true story all the way through, and yet it still took the wind out of me. When I turned back time the last time, I was shocked, but all the hints flashed to my head, and I nearly applauded. That is great video game design.
Yep.
And then also about Shadow of the Colossus, it gets a special mention. The slow realization that I wasn't a force of good, that I was killing non-aggressive monsters, and that it was actually killing me as I did it, is one of the most affecting things I've ever experienced in games. Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good example of, like, they tell you that up front, like, you're not going to like this and you're going to have to give something up when you do this, but you think when you walk into it that this is going to be a video game and that it's going to be hard and a trial for the character, as opposed to, like, no, actually Dorman never lied to you.
Yeah. This, and I think this can only happen in a video game. This is the kind of, like, you start that in Shadow of the Colossus out thinking, oh yeah, this is probably bad for me. And you might even kind of laugh about it. Like, oh yeah, there's no way that those black ribbons are good. And then it's hard to even call it a twist, because it happens slowly, that you kind of, almost like a frog in a pot of boiling, or a water that's warming up to boiling, you kind of realize, oh, this is, you know, at some point you're like, I'm definitely going to hell for this. There's something irreversible happening here.
Yeah.
And it goes from kind of the laughing, it's a feeling, I imagine, of, you know, going from laughing about, you know, I smoke cigarettes, yeah, it's probably going to get me, to, oh shit, I have lung cancer.
Ooh, mm-hmm. You bummed me out.
No, sorry. But that's, yeah. I think that is a twist that cannot be achieved in a 2-hour movie.
Yeah.
Or that kind of gut-wrenching realization needs to happen slowly.
Well, specifically, like, a lot of the famous twists in games are like, hey, you did this with your own hands, didn't you, you monster? Which is speaking directly to the player, as opposed to pointing out some kind of monster in the story, like, mm-hmm. you know, falling down at the end of that was like, oh wait, I'm the bad guy. Mm-hmm. Well, fuck yeah, but spoilers for falling down. Dennis, what does Allison say, and also get her other response down the line?
Allison says everything that happens in Chrono Trigger.
There you
also
go.
Also, honorable mention goes to the ending of Act 1 of Broken Age, and I'm going to ask that we don't discuss that too much further, because I'm playing it on my Vita.
Yes, I have no idea what happens at the end of the first act of Broken Age. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Chrono Trigger, like, there's definitely a moment in that, and, like, it's a 20-year-old game now, so we can talk about it, I suppose, but there's a point where your main character just straight up dies.
Yep.
Yeah. And I believe reviving him is optional.
Huh.
You know, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
There are endings you can get without him.
Cool. Yeah.
Pretty good. Sam writes in about Deadly Premonition, saying, definitely when Deadly Premonition reveals the identity of the mastermind behind the events of the game. For as crazy and off the wall as Deadly Premonition gets, it actually provides evidence for an observant player instead of cropping it out and using a complete ass pull. That is right. It's there if you want to see it, at least the first reveal. The second reveal does similarly come out of kind of nowhere. Ah, but not really. The clues are there too, now that I'm thinking about it. Man, Deadly Premonition is so good. Oh my gosh, I kind of want to play it again. But I can't. Let's see here. Jella, what does Michael say about Portal?
Michael Farmer says, finding out the cake was a lie, I'll never forget.
And the internet will not let you forget.
Nope, because it's everywhere, even fucking 10 years later.
Of course.
God damn it. Yeah. And then somebody in the replies, let's see here, Ollie says, it is not a lie, actually. So.
Well, and then there was another reply after that where someone took it serious and was like, no, actually, this is a serious answer to that question.
Yeah, Tim writes in about finding the rat den, like actually getting behind the walls and finding evidence of other test subjects and realizing not all is as it seems.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Noah say about System Shock 2?
I see. Is this about System Shock 2?
Yes. Yeah.
The Polito form.
The Polito form is dead.
The Polito form is dead, insect. I assume that's the inflection I should use.
Yes, because it's Shodan. Yeah, we didn't even talk about System Shock 3 being announced.
Oh, yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There we go. I didn't like System Shock 2 very much, so. I'm happy for people. I'm happy for people who are happy. But that is a good reveal. That is definitely like a high watermark for that game. Let's see here. I'll pick up with Jeff, who writes in about Mass Effect, saying, when you learn that Saren's flagship is actually a Reaper, the scope of the game just blew open at this point. One of the only true reveals of a bad guy behind the bad guy that really worked. Wait, you mean Zeromus didn't work for you? Oh, man. Yeah. That was like man, I wish Mass Effect, the first one, was better.
Yeah.
They need to like remake that with the Mass Effect 2 engine.
Yeah, that's a really good idea.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Have no fear. Eventually they will remake it. Everything will be remade. Inevitability.
Yeah. Everything is a cycle. Jala, what does David say about Chrono Cross?
Body swapping with the antagonist was a nice move. Then finding out said antagonist was your dad, who actually thought he was doing the right thing, but was actually duped by a bigger bad.
I read this a bigger dad in the first time.
You're not my real dad. My real dad's big. He's a big dad. Yeah.
Big daddy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It works in context. Like when you say it like that, it sounds dumb.
He can be a tipless daddy.
I'd rather he not be. Huh. Yeah, no, I Chrono Cross is really good, guys. Don't let anybody dissuade you. Don't let this perfectly true thing about this game. Oh, man. Let's see here. Dennis, what does Phil say?
Phil says Metal Gear Solid, especially when you go through all the extra steps to disarm the nuclear launch code, only to find out you armed it instead, and that the terrorists never actually had launch codes and duped you the whole time.
Yep.
Whoops.
You brought it right to their doorstep. But don't worry, Fox Die is a thing, so we're even Steven.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plenty of good stuff. Finding out that the cyborg ninja's Gray Fox. That's
I feel like
one.
you could throw any string of words together, and I would believe it's a twist for Metal Gear Solid.
Oh, man. What do you mean the Falcon found the antidote? I'm not good at improvising these.
No, that's exactly, yeah.
Okay, cool.
The banana slugs were actually poisoned with the Reaper code.
Yeah. When you Mambo dog face to the banana patch, yeah. Cool. That was you, Dennis, right?
Mm-hmm.
I forgot. We're going so quick when there's three of us. The rotation gets all messed up.
Gotta snap through. We might actually get this all in under time, though.
Yeah, let me check here.
No.
I'm going to take a moment to check. Yeah, we're doing fine. Mm-hmm. So Brandon writes in with about Far Cry 4. This is a more recent one, if anybody wants to. Boop.
Like
boop,
Dennis.
Boop. He doesn't actually spoil or anything.
Yeah. Learning why your mother left Kirat and discovering the history between your parents and Pagan Min, the villain, was pretty good. Yeah, well, I guess that's not a real problem or yeah, real spoiler, because you know you're coming back there because of your parents.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. You know there's a guy named Pagan Min.
Yeah. All of it's there. All of it is there. Jala, what does Chris say about gone home? And also, life is strange. And I may actually go away for the life is strange one because I didn't see that.
So. I didn't see it either, and I want to play that game. Oh, well.
Oh, okay, no. Okay. Oh, so only do Gone Home. Like, that one's 2 years old or 3 years old now. Like, let's be fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
So about Gone Home, the ending is what he's talking about. I spent the entire experience fearing the attic. I just knew it was going to be a corpse city up there. But the game surprised me. What I thought was going to be a tragic horror game ended up being a very touching teenage love story.
Yeah, that's why it worked for me. Yeah, mm-hmm. lure me in with the spooks, and then you gotta go for the heart.
You gotta find a word for heart that rhymes with spooks now.
Yeah, can't.
I'll be researching
too late at night, sorry.
And then yeah, there's a comment on Life is Strange on the Facebook page if anyone wants to go check that out.
Yep, but we have a quorum of people who are interested in playing that game, so
yeah.
Let's see here. Dennis, what does Josh say about the old Spec Ops?
Josh says, the ending, not the epilogue, of Spec Ops The Line for sure. The way the game got progressively more and more trippy, the finish really hit home.
Yeah. I am due to go back to Spec Ops, actually. That is a short enough game that I wouldn't feel bad about replaying it.
Mm-mm. Oh, it's a short game? You might get me to play it.
How old is it?
That's like 2012, I think.
2012?
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe before that, like it's like maybe 2011.
How long until you can do it for WoF?
It was okay. So that's actually going to be really tough because we did that bonus level about it. Like if it's on true. The network, like we can't we can't justify actually.
Can't
yeah,
up.
Like we can do like people have asked about it and we've directed them toward that bonus level because I'm actually really proud of that. But yeah, that was 2012 when that came out.
I should reach back out to Jorg and see if he wants to talk about Dreadnought.
Oh yeah.
Ooh,
go for
Red
it.
Knot.
Sure.
Let's see here. That was you talking about that. So I'll pick up with Ricardo, who writes in about Assassin's Creed, saying the Assassin's Creed 2 ending, when Minerva starts talking directly to Desmond when Ezio finds her. That I totally did not see coming. Now, I feel about Assassin's Creed. So I played Assassin's Creed 2, and even still, I feel about Assassin's Creed spoilers the exact same way that Dennis feels about Metal Gear spoilers. You can just arrange anything. Like it's like Destiny. It's all proper nouns. Like going nuts for donuts, man.
I remember this. I remember the oh shit moment of wait, she's talking to Desmond.
Mm-hmm.
Like past memory person is talking to present time person.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember anything else. And also, like. You know how the Assassin's Creed series falls off / I don't know how much they ever draw that story to conclusion. And in my mind, the Assassin's Creed overarching story is just this gigantic cock tease where they're never really going to tell you what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's the lost problem, right? I'd just have to go look up a plot synopsis or something that analyzes what is going. Because I'm intrigued by the idea of what actually is going on. It's a really cool premise, and I think to this day, just the premise of Assassin's Creed and genetic memory and all that stuff is one of the strongest out there. But I don't know that I'd ever go back through the games to find out the whole story.
What I want is a summary of what happens in the main story. Most of the summaries that I've seen just kind of pull in a bunch of the side stuff too, and it's like I don't want to know that Hitler that's the barbarian version of Hitler. I don't want to know that Hitler was working with the Templars, you know.
Yeah.
Like and he was working against Stalin, who was also with the Templars. Like yeah, it doesn't work for me. Like, I just want to know what happens with the main characters and that's it. Oh gosh. That's probably my cue to have Jala finish this out. What does Gus say? This is distinct from Gustavo.
This is a legitimate Gus. Hi Gus. Okay. so the ending in Metal Gear Solid 3, when Eva explains to Snake that the boss's defection to the Soviet Union was a ruse for a secret mission in which she was to steal the Philosopher's legacy. But after Volgan nukes a laboratory, her mission is revised to where now she must be killed by her trusted protege in order to prevent nuclear war while still conducting her original mission objectives. What a punch in the gut. Yeah. And I, it's hard for me to read this with a straight face because after Dennis's assertion, I'm just hearing like random silliness head.
All of this means something. It's actually a really, really good plot twist.
Oh, I know it is. It like I played the game. Yeah. It's awesome. But yeah, still, it's still hard for me to read it with a straight face now. Yeah, thanks, Dennis.
It's how it, yeah. Like, just copy and paste me talking about Chrono Cross onto this. I assure you it's really good. I don't care how dumb it sounds.
It is. It's really good. It is.
Metal Banana Gear Slug.
Well, they did have an Ape Escape tie-in in 3. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, let's go ahead and go around with ours.
Oh yeah, I guess that's a thing, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dennis, you have one in the hopper?
I have one, yeah. It's the twist from Jack 3, where they explain who the Precursors, who is this like ancient mythical race that you've kind of been chasing slash getting direction from slash maybe they're still around the entire 3-game series. Hmm. There's a big reveal at the end of it of what it is. And it's essentially, sorry everyone, it's a Super Bowl game. It's essentially a race of people just like Daxter, like little weasel type things. And it's just, it's part of the reason I love 3 so much, because 2 got way up its own ass with its darkness and grittiness. And I've talked about before how 3 was like that perfect balance where it kind of had the wink and the smile to everything. And that was just the ultimate, like, of course that's what it is. It was kind of a laugh out loud moment where, you know, you were expecting it to be something really grandiose and heavy. So that's mine.
Cool.
I'm going to go ahead with mine. I could talk about any number of things in like the Silent Hill series, like the twist at the end of Silent Hill Shattered Memories is really, really good. The midway twist in Silent Hill 3 also good, but I don't want to ruin these things, right? The reveal of, you know, what really happened with James's wife and 2 also really good, but I'm going to pick one that's kind of more recent and a little bit easier to get to. And I don't think it actually changes much of your kind of enjoyment or interpretation of the game. Little Inferno. Did either of you play that?
Nope.
No, I remember you talking about it. And from my memory, it's one of those kind of like slow, gut-wrenching realizations in the line of Shadow of the Colossus. But that's from me remembering you talking about it.
A little bit. So it's, you know, in practice, the game is more of a toy than a game. Like you're burning stuff just to watch it burn and ordering it from a catalog and trying to get them to interact by mixing up these combinations, and kind of like you see the name of this combination you're supposed to make and then you try and intuit what you're supposed to put together, and you are burning these things to earn enough money to buy more toys, which will earn you more money to buy more toys, until ultimately the turn happens. And it turns into a little bit of a point-and-click game, because you find out that this is like a post-apocalyptic world where it is winter out time all the side, and everybody is burning these toys to stay warm, and this is a massive waste of time that you are complicit in.
Huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
And so this game where you are wasting time by burning things is a commentary about kind of meaningfully spending your time in real life.
Nice.
Yeah. And it has a definite turn. And I think that, you know, I'm never going to go back and play through that game again. Just because there's not enough there for it. But when I first saw that and realized, I was like, oh, that actually, like, I got the sense that that's what this was, because it hits you over the head with like a sledgehammer. I'm not a bright person, but I got it there. But it was nice that they actually like took it through into the conclusion and made it explicit and actually like said, like, yes, this is the moral. Think about the past 2 hours that you spent, you know. And it does it in a way that's not like, hey, you asshole, you know, thanks for the money,
yeah,
dick.
See, yeah, I was going to ask you, because that sounds pretty patronizing. And
No, it doesn't. You know, I have
it
a high tolerance
that way.
Yeah, I have a high tolerance for that kind of stuff. It's a little bit more humane than that, honestly. But
yeah, I see. This is I would put from hearing you describe it like that. I would put it in the same category of Papo EO, mm-hmm. where I'm completely okay with it being blunt about what the theme is, mm-hmm. because the real value of the game is in the experience and mm-hmm. kind of sitting in that theme, not figuring out what the theme is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jella, how about you?
Well, I have a couple of answers, and neither of them is anything like close to recent. Just to give credit, the first thing I thought of was Gone Home and its ending, but that was already mentioned, so I've got two other old ones. So first thing I thought of is actually a literal, like, physical twist in the game that has nothing to do with the story, really. Just in Castlevania Symphony of the Night, when they literally flip the castle over and they're reusing their assets in this really cool way, and now you have to play on the ceiling! Like, what the hell? You know? That was pretty cool. So that's a literal twist for you. That's how my brain works. So... that's how my brain works. That's what I was thinking of first. And then other than that, I guess story-wise, the only thing that really came to mind that was just like, this struck me, and it's really because like I played it when I was little, was Lunar 2, when you find out the Galleon, who was the big bad guy in the first game and who still seems to be a bad guy, like reincarnated, and goddamn, he won't ever go away. Like, he's actually been helping you out and, you know, double crossed the bigger bad and is helping you. Hmm. And then he dies. Like, oh,
I wasn't sad when you died at first, but now I'm sad.
Yeah,
some Professor Snape level shit.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And he was my favorite character. So, yeah, like not in the first game, but in the second one. Yeah.
Oh,
so, yeah. Anyway,
that's cool. All. Yeah. So then some twists.
Yeah, those are some twists. Lots of them.
Yeah.
Do the twist.
I don't know how to end the show now, aside from thanking everybody.
Yeah, thanks everyone for writing in.
Yeah. If you would like to, if you're listening and you would like to participate in these, go ahead and go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and look for those responses to go up on Tuesday afternoons. And thank you, Dennis, for putting these up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes Jala too.
Oh, I want to put out a PSA because this is really it's bugging me. There was someone in the Slack channel who suggested a really good question, and I saw it, I'm like, oh, I'm going to use that. And then I went back to the Slack channel today, and it was archived, and I can't remember who asked it or what the question was, but I remember it was really good. So if
use Evernote.
I remember you. You are not forgotten. Post in the Slack channel again, and we'll get that question on air.
But also. This is a little bit early, but I'm going to be going to PAX South, so yay, anybody who wants to go to PAX South, there's already a few people who are listeners who have said that they will go. Mm-hmm. I will be there. We can arrange to meet up sometime. I'll be there on Saturday and Sunday, and I was thinking about meeting up with whoever wants to on Saturday night. So anyway, so if you're going to be going to PAX South over in San Antonio, let me know via the Facebook, my Twitter, Slack, whatever. Stuff.
Neat. Yeah, so I think that's all the PSA kind of stuff. I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
Forever Jolichon!
Whoa, that is really loud.
And oh god, Ben left, so we have no way to end the show. We have to be on this call forever.
All right, okay.
Or at least until Ben comes back.
I'll just re-edit his response from before into the end. That way we're good. Technicalities.
You can find me at Merkelizer.
Also, stick around for titles.
That's good stuff.
Okay. So does anybody have one they want to throw in?
Hot package.
Hot package.
Okay.
I'm sorry, that one. That
had I had Hitlar spelled HIT-LAR.
I had Hitlar the Barbarian. I like the idea of putting in the dash, just because it's not like I'm making light of Hitler.
That makes it more high fantasy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? Okay.
Really, I didn't really have any titles. So.
Let's see here. I have Rent a Garland. One word sproing. Quarter to third mons.
I don't even remember what that was out about.
that was also about the hot package.
Yeah, that was the I was talking about seeing most of Chun-Li's crotch.
I follow.
Pecs and seps.
They're all about Street Fighter.
I know, right? Hitler the Barbarian, and then a legitimate Gus.
Okay, so I feel like it's got to be one of the Street Fighter V ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we had run through those again.
Hot package, one word sproing, quarter to third mons, pecs and seps. I'm a fan of quarter to third mons because the word mons is funny. but pecs and seps is probably the better way to go.
Let's see. I've actually never heard the word mons before.
Really?
that is referring to the area. Oh, boy.
You know, I'm just going to go context clues.
The
is
soft,
exactly
fatty tissue it's above the goodies.
Yes, there we go. Cool.
Oh, goodness.
I'm a prude, Jala. yes.
You're very Midwestern. it's like, you know, that's part of being from the Midwest.
Yeah.
So he can't possibly put the mons out there for like everybody to see. So
No, but I kind of like it.
But he wants to, but he's not going to.
Nah, I kind of want. Like, are you guys down with that? Because I'm down with quarter to third mons. That's funny.
Let's do it.
Yeah, that's funny.
Oh, I totally pushed him over into it. Do it.
Do the mons. All right.